Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. If you have any questions, show ideas, or you'd like to be a guest, please send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Also, check out my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, at www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. If you'd like an autographed copy, send us an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com. Well, tonight I have such an exciting show planned. On the line, I have Chef Marcus. Chef Marcus is an award-winning chef, green restaurateur, real food activist, professional speaker, restaurant consultant, and ultra-marathoner. He is devoting his career to whole food, whole life approach. Chef Marcus has coined the phrase eco-lectic cuisine. The notion behind eco-lectic cuisine is how Chef Marcus marries healthy food with ethically and socially responsible, sustainable business practices. Marcus is often heard saying, "It's the whole picture that matters." Chef Marcus had to overcome a handful of health challenges in the late 1990s. He was able to eliminate all of the medications he was taking and, in transition, cure an asthmatic condition he had from birth. After overcoming his various health challenges, Chef Marcus was invited to contribute over 200 recipes to several Dr. Gary Null's books. In addition to successfully owning and operating the first green certified restaurant in the Hudson Valley, Aroma Thyme Bistro, Chef Marcus has begun to devote his time consulting and troubleshooting for other restaurants. Chef Marcus, welcome to Insight into Healing. I'm so excited to have you on this evening.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much.
So I've been reading your bio. How did this all come together? I know you had certain health concerns, but how did you put these all together? How did it begin?
Great question. So as a young chef in the late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s, I was always taught to cook very, very high-quality, tasty food, or what I thought was high quality. You go to culinary school, they don't talk much about nutrition, but they talk a lot about deep frying, adding sugar, white flour, and of course, working at some beautiful hotels. I worked at some very fine hotels across the country, like the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, the Greenbrier in West Virginia. And as a young chef, you just see these massive trucks pull in the loading dock every day and unload unlimited quantities of food. And as a young chef, I started questioning, like, well, where's all this food coming from? It's odd how we can get the same size filet mignon day in and day out, not have to worry about supply. And of course, your farmer down the road on your farm market, you know, they just have a seasonal business. And yet these food distributors have a year-round business of sourcing anything. And of course, at one time it was great. Oh, this is flown in from Paris. This is overnighted from Alaska. This was, you know, from South America. This is some rare thing. It's first day in season in the Southern Hemisphere. And that was cool to a certain extent. But then the fact of that most restaurants, and I was taught this as a young chef, that diners do not come to restaurants. And it was the British chef, so he goes, for their vitamins and minerals. They don't do that. They don't come for their fiber to a restaurant. And so at a very young apprentice, that's what I was taught, that vitamins, minerals, fiber, the whole food approach was not the way to go. It was a matter of making the food taste that possibly could.
Yes. And I think you bring up so many different thoughts that I think it's so important for people that healthy eating, whole foods, is not just a way, because sometimes people say, oh, just a way to spend extra money. It really makes a difference where the food comes from and the quality of the food.
100% absolutely. Now, there were chefs that were doing similar things. You know, Alice Waters was very farm to table, Rick Bayless. There was a lot of chefs out there that were really using farms. But as I noticed with some of the farm to table chefs using local products, there was no health concerns. So they were using the better products, the seasonal products, the stuff that was in our backyard. But then again, they were still using white flour, white sugar, deep frying, using tons of butter, loading all their food with cream. And I feel that, you know, you can take any ingredient, and if you add salt, butter, cream, sugar, and or deep fry it, you're going to make anything taste good. But it's a challenge once you eliminate the fryer, the white flour, the white sugar, all the excessive fats. To be able to make dessert is an extreme challenge. To be able to make a sauce, and the average consumer, the average diner, the average patron going to a restaurant has no idea what's really in their food, how much sugar, how much ingredients that you normally wouldn't use at home. I mean, a basic recipe for like a sweet and sour sauce will call for cups and cups of vinegar to go into this. To go in, and just the excessive amount in desserts and even dishes, like you get a grilled steak dish with a side sauce on it. There's sugar in it. There's other things in it that you just would say, wow. An average person says, well, I don't eat sugar. You hear that from a lot of people. I watch my sugar. I don't eat sugar. And then you turn around and see them at a restaurant, and they just have no idea. If the average consumer knew all the sugar, the salt, the butter that was going into their food, it's a standard practice at a lot of restaurants. After they cook a vegetable, they just douse it in a lot of butter. I worked at one restaurant where everything went into melted butter. The steaks got rested in melted butter. The vegetables went in melted butter. Whatever it was, whether it was spaghetti squash or broccoli, it went in butter. Whether it was a steak, a filet mignon, a chicken breast, a whole roasted chicken, it got doused with massive amounts of butter. And the average consumer's saying, well, gee, I don't really eat that much butter. You go out to eat, you're eating a lot of this stuff.
And you think you're eating healthy, and you don't realize how much butter is really defeating your purpose.
You have no idea. And, you know, the chefs don't even really have any idea. And, you know, when you go to some of these restaurants, they're buying these convenience foods. And that's a whole nother level of chemicals, preservatives, trans fats, corn syrup, funky chemicals that you can't pronounce. But the chef thinks, well, you know, I'm buying it from a distributor, so how bad could it actually be? When you go into the grocery store, I tell people, do not read the front of the box. The front of the box is where the advertisement is. You want to flip over and look at the ingredients. All of a sudden, those whole wheat tortillas, that whole grain bread, all of a sudden now has corn syrup, white flour, it has molasses in it, or it has brown sugar. And the first ingredient is white flour. And it has trans fats. And you're like, well, gee, where in the world is my whole wheat in these whole wheat tortillas? Well, it's towards the bottom of the list. So this is the same thing in restaurants. When a restaurant tells you they have sweet potato pancakes, so the sweet potato in the mix they're buying is the farthest thing in the list. And the first ingredients is really what the pancake mix is. Restaurant after restaurant is guilty of this. You can walk into a Sam's Club, you can walk into a Restaurant Depot and see what chefs are buying. The packages are there and be like, oh my gosh, wow, I had no idea. Now, restaurants, unfortunately, unfortunately for us, they're in business to make money. And making money is usually achieved by buying cheaper foods. And buying cheaper foods, we're cutting corners, we're cutting quality. And the distributors, the salespeople know when they walk into a new restaurant to make a sale that they have to come in at a very price-sensitive level. Very rarely do restaurants base who they're buying their food from based upon relationships. It's based upon who can get the cheapest butter this week, the cheapest bread, the cheapest salt, the cheapest sugar. And a lot of restaurants put stuff out on bids where they have a bid list of their top 15 items or top 30 items or all of the items. So a restaurant or distributor saying, well, gee, I know this restaurant's price sensitive. I have to buy the cheapest possible tomatoes this week. And where do I buy the cheapest possible tomatoes? Well, I'm going to import them from either Mexico or I'm going to buy cheap Florida tomatoes, as opposed to somebody that says, well, gee, we have these beautiful local in-season tomatoes that are in our backyard, but they cost twice the price. Or even if they're 10 or 20% more, restaurants have a hard time swallowing that percentage difference. And the problem is most restaurants are afraid. They're just very afraid that they can't support spending more for their money. They're also afraid that, they're not afraid, but they're really, they don't know how to tell the proper story. Years ago, I learned cooking is storytelling. Selling food is storytelling. People want to know something significant about their dish, about their food, about the restaurant, about the chef. So for me, I have lots of different story angles, from the Banana Foster. It has a very sentimental meaning to myself and my wife because we got engaged to Banana Foster, and we convey that to guests when we sell that dish to them or when we talk about it. The meats on our menu, the fish, whatever it is, the salt, the sugar, it's all about where the food comes from and the transparency. For me, it's all about transparency. A guest walks into my restaurant and say, Marcus, I'm avoiding this chemical, I'm avoiding this gluten, I'm avoiding this. I have no problem saying, here's my burger bun package. Here's the actual burger buns we buy. Here are the 8 ingredients in the burger bun or the 3 ingredients. Here's the Papadoms. Here's whatever it is that we're buying. Here's the label. Here's the package. Here's what I buy, and I'm proud of what I buy. And most restaurants aren't like that. Several years ago, there was a guy looking for cans, and he was doing an art project, or I'm not sure what exactly his ultimate goal was. So I said, sure, just go through my dumpster and pick out whatever you need. And he goes, you really want me to go through your dumpster? And I said, yeah, that's no problem. Just go through it. He goes, I've never met a restaurateur, a restaurant owner, a chef that said, just go through my dumpster. I'm like, usually that's like off limits because restaurants don't want you to see what they're buying. And I said, no, you can see what I'm buying. I'm proud of what I buy. And he was like, wow, that really makes a big difference. Just a month ago, a guest came in and goes, Marcus, where's that great asparagus dish you have? I'm so upset it's not on the menu. And I said, well, no, asparagus is something we serve in season. I said, I could serve it year round, but I'd be buying it from Peru, from South America, from Mexico. I go, I could buy it, of course, but I'm not sure where it's coming from. I said, so we like to reserve the right to serve asparagus when it's in season and local. He looked at me, he goes, Marcus, I respect you for that. And I'll be back in the spring for the asparagus dish. And a lot of chefs are afraid to say that.
Yes, and I think it makes such a big difference why you stand apart from so many, too, is your passion and how you know where you're buying your food, your ingredients. But also, you take in mind people's medications in different ways, because I find so many times in my practice, people are on psychiatric medication. They're on these different types of medication, which are known to put pounds on. And usually they feel that this is just, you know, an endless uphill battle, and they don't know how to eat healthy because this is still going to put weight on them from the medication. But it sounds like your type of food, your restaurant, is a place where they can really at least feel proactive in helping their weight, helping their health by what they eat and knowing what to eat.
You know, I try to educate people, and people ask me all the time. They ask me tons of nutrition questions, so they know I've been studying nutrition for 20 years now, reversing my own medical conditions. You know, people say, oh my gosh, how did you do that? It wasn't that difficult. It was a matter of having an open mind at first. It was a matter of not eating what I was cooking for my guests, which was a real big factor. When you meet a chef who doesn't eat the food that the restaurant's serving, they bring their own lunch or dinner in, there's a problem. There's a disconnect. And that was the point I was at. And of course, at that point, the only thing to do was to open my own restaurant. I was at a country club in Westchester County, and I got accused from the general manager of turning the place into a spa cuisine. But there were people buying the spa cuisine, and people were feeling great about it. But it was the men who wanted their steak, and the women who, you know, were on their diets, and people, some other people that were health conscious were appreciative. But the manager was like, you're turning this place into a spa. And I knew at that point that the place was just not for me. And of course, I don't cook, quote unquote, spa cuisine. I don't cook, you know, it's not like a Healthy Habits lunch cafe where we're serving an avocado with sprouts on a pita bread. You know, we're serving gourmet food. We're serving wild salmon. We're serving grass-fed beef. We're serving a lot of vegetarian, a lot of vegan food, plant-based food, as you want to call it now. So my menu varies drastically across the board, from pizzas, burgers, to plant-based foods, to desserts that are all actually none of my desserts have white sugar, or white flour. Then none of them have butter or cream. We serve ice cream from Ronnie Brook, which is the local dairy. But other than that, all my desserts are gluten-free and dairy-free and egg-free, and there's no white sugar in them. So by all means, we're not some kind of spa cuisine. We're serving gourmet food with real ingredients. So we use a lot of maple syrup. Sometimes we use agave nectar. I love palm sugar. Evaporated coconut blossom sap is my favorite sweetener. It has great flavor, has a great nutritional profile. So even down to our sweeteners, down to our salt, I've done a lot of research on salt, and salt is very confusing for the average consumer and the average chef. They see the word sea salt on a package, and they were like, oh, this is great. Sea salt's great. But when you think about it, all salt came from the sea. So technically, anything that's in a that you can go buy in the store, no matter what it says, technically came from a sea, whether it's an ancient dried up seabed or currently from the sea. Himalayan salt is fantastic, but there's over 50 different companies mining in Pakistan. And so when you say Himalayan salt, it's a generic term. It's not like a brand that has these high standards. It's just coming from a great area. For me personally, I like to buy the Redmond Real Salt from Utah. It has one mine, family owned. There's no other outsourcing. It's their salt. What you see in the mine, if you were to take a hunk of salt out of the mine right now and grind it up, that's what they're putting right into their package of salt. That's not true for a lot of other salt manufacturers, salt producers, salt companies. There's processing going on, even sea salt. It's processed. It can be bleached. It can be heated up to high temperatures. I had a chef years ago that didn't want to use my salt. And I go, what's wrong with our salt? He goes, well, Marcus, there's all those specks in it. My food doesn't look as good. I can't salt certain things, white things, like a white fish. And I go, well, that's the minerals. That's the other good stuff that's in the salt that the other companies strip out of it. And I said, so I'm not changing salt. So you're going to have to get used to my salt here, was the bottom line to that story. But chefs are trained to cook with their eyes and a lot of times. And, you know, so it's like, well, we just have to add this or subtract this because it doesn't look good. And if it's, you know, a salt that has mineral flakes in it or something else, we shouldn't be using this. And it's a shame because there's a total disconnect when you go to restaurants for nourishing your body and nourishing the environment. It's always about just packing on flavor after flavor after flavor. But the flavors, they know, the manufacturers, the big companies, that a combination of salt, sugar, and fat is highly addictive. And it just rolls right into the restaurant kitchens. Salt, fat, sugar, any of those combinations by themselves or together, highly addictive.
Yes. What would you recommend? Because I know a lot of my listeners, you know, if you're on a budget, if you're on medication that you technically are going to be on either for life or a long period of time, what is something they can do every day, a small step, or steps they can do during the day just to eat healthier, to help them feel better when they're on medication or they're trying to get over an illness? And even for people who are healthy, who just want to have a change so they're in the right direction to healthy eating and healthy living.
So there's several things that one can do to start living a healthier life. First of all, slow down and eat. No matter what you're eating, slow down, savor it, chew it slowly, chew very, very good. Let your natural saliva and enzymes in your mouth actually start breaking down the food as opposed to swallowing your food in whole big chunks and eating on the run. That's first. Second would be to eat less types of food during a meal. So do more mono eating. It's easier to digest. So for example, if you're going to have rice with your meal, don't eat chicken, don't eat fish, eat rice and vegetables. Eat foods that are easier to digest. More mono meals. I love mono meals. I can literally sit down and eat a couple packages of strawberries or a whole pineapple. Instead of mixing it with other things, let your body digest foods. Eat faster transit foods, the foods that are going to get through your body quicker. A good tip also is if you're going to eat fattier foods, eat them after you've eaten something else. So don't eat French fries and then all of a sudden say, gee, I want to eat some fruit now, because French fries are extremely fattening, and that's going to slow any kind of fat is going to slow your digestion down, and it's going to back up all the food in your stomach and in your digestive system. So eat the foods that are going to go down quicker first, the low fat foods, and then if you're going to partake in something else, make sure it's spaced out. Food combining and food timing is super, super important. One thing is not to go to bed with a full stomach. So many people are just used to eating late. Get in the habit of, if you eat at 7 o'clock, start eating at 6:30. Then once you're fine with that, start eating at 6 o'clock. Then try to work your way down where your last like meal is 5:30, even 4:30. Or if you're going to be forced to have something at night, make a smoothie, make a fruit-based, make a green smoothie, make some fresh juice. things are going to digest in your body easily. When I go out to a restaurant now, I try to eat, if I'm going out and it's later, I try to eat just a bowl of soup. It's already pureed, hopefully, and it's more of a liquid or a broth, and that's something very easy to digest or go to bed with that. Now, keep in mind, I'm just like a lot of other people. I go through cycles where I don't eat right. The weight comes on. I don't exercise properly. My mind isn't in the right place. My discipline isn't there. And I experience that roller coaster just like a lot of other people out there. And I'm in an industry where I have access to as much food as I want. And I can stress eat, and it's a stressful industry. I can eat at the wrong time. I can eat the wrong combinations. And all of a sudden, within a couple months, I'm like a totally different person. And I'm just like, gee, where did this 20, 25 pounds come on? And that just recently happened to me last year. I had lost a lot of staff here. Staff had been with me 4 or 5 years. And to train new staff is a challenge, especially all at one time. And I was working 12 to 16 hours a day, even up to 20 hours a day some days. And at that point, I should have been much more conscious, but I wasn't. And then all of a sudden, you have a glass of wine or a beer after your shift because you think you deserve it, right? Oh, I had a stressful shift. I deserve a beer. I deserve a wine. I deserve a Manhattan. Well, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, that leads to 2 glasses of wine or 3 glasses of wine. And all of a sudden, it's like you have to drag yourself home. You have to drag yourself out of bed in the morning, and you didn't eat right, and you're back to the stressful mode. And I was at a point where I literally put on 30 pounds last year. So beginning of this year, I was like, okay, I need to be a new person. I know what to do. And literally within 2 weeks, 15 pounds were gone just like that. And the other 10 pounds have come off. And of course, I still want to lose more weight, but it's just so easy. I'm just like a lot of other people. I get on that roller coaster and it happens so quickly to us. And I don't try to take medication.
I think your story, which is so incredible, because I go through the same thing too. And I think people need to know that's nothing wrong with them. That's a human thing. You seem to sometimes, you know, some days you're really great or some months you're doing really well, and then you kind of fall off a little bit and indulge and enjoy yourself. And as you said earlier, sugar and all those fattening foods are addictive. So you might go somewhere for a friend's birthday and say, you know, I'm going to have that big piece of cake or that big, you know, macaroni and cheese or French fries or something like that, which doesn't fill you. It makes you even hungrier and crave more food of that type. But I think it's okay to say, you know what, I splurge and not beat yourself up, but be able to get back on your schedule and say, okay, I'm human, and allow yourself the leniency, but also have the structure.
That's super important to get back on track. And one of the most important things I've learned over the years is to have morning rituals. So when you get up, make sure that your morning starts off great. And the way you do that is by taking time to prepare your food for the day. Prepare yourself for success. So in the morning, I like to juice. So I'll make a green juice, and then I'll make pineapple juice. And the pineapple juice I bring to work, and the green juice I drink at home. But a lot of people, when they're on the run, like salespeople, I'm on the run all day. I'm going from account to account to account. And they just are used to pulling into a drive-thru of whether it's Chipotle or whether it's McDonald's. They're not used to going into a grocery store and picking up a bag of baby carrots, picking up a container of hummus, picking up a couple apples, picking up a couple bananas. They're not used to that. You know, my favorite six-pack is bananas in my front seat. You know, for me, that's you give me some bananas and I'm good to go. So a lot of people just don't have those morning rituals, and they don't set themselves up for success. You're responsible for your food. You cannot leave it up to McDonald's or Chipotle or Panera Bread to make sure that you're eating healthy. You have to do it yourself. You have to pack food, take dried figs, take some dried dates, take some things that are going to be quick energy, nourish you, have a good array of vitamins and minerals, pack lots of water. Have water in your car ready to go. The containers they have now to keep water cold throughout the whole day are amazing. Take hot soup with you in a thermal container. We have an abundance of tools and things to get things done in grocery stores. You can walk into a grocery store instead of walking into Panera Bread. And people don't have that mindset. Now, I just read an article the other day that there's a whole convenience food makeover going across the country. 7-Eleven is now downplaying their Slurpee, and they're now selling fresh juices. There's fruit in the store.
Wow.
There's better options, even if you buy like a nut bar or something instead of a candy bar. So there's a revolution going on across the country. People want this. The stores are realizing it, but the restaurants are lagging behind.
Yes, yes. And I think you brought up such an important point. You know, you have to prepare yourself in the morning on how you're supposed to start your day and have a food plan. I know sometimes it's hard for people to get together and do that. But I think that's where you find yourself being able to safeguard, because you find, okay, I'm really hungry, I didn't eat, let me grab this muffin. Oh, I'm really hungry, I'm just going to grab this bagel with cream cheese. And these places, you know, the portions are huge. And you're starving, so you're, you know, eating it quickly in the car or as you're running to meetings, and you're still hungry, and it's, the food is not the healthiest food. So when you have something where you can kind of snack on all day, like have a couple of carrots, have a banana, I love juicing, juicing and protein shakes and things like that. That is something, it takes a while to drink, it takes a while to chew. So you have to be really mindful when you're eating it or drinking it, not just stuffing it in your mouth and going, which doesn't really fill you up.
Exactly, exactly. I've learned that I'm a stress eater. I've known I'm a stress eater. And I've learned now, because in the restaurant business, you know, stress can happen at any moment. All of a sudden, the kitchen gets 15 tickets in. There's tables that have to go out. Somebody drops a dish. They burn a dish. The waiter does something wrong, puts an order in wrong. All of a sudden, now the line is backing up. Food has to get out. Customers are asking where their food is. It's very stressful. It's so easy to stick your hand in something and just start snacking and eating something, you know, whether it's a piece of brie cheese or whether it's French fries. We don't have a fryer, which we're lucky for that. So, but a lot of restaurants, just these guys just pick up and eat. And we're just trained in whatever we do is we eat out of stress. We eat as a comfort. And as soon as you can identify that and stop yourself, you know, a lot of people take time out to make sure their house is stocked with Oreos and whatever other convenient junk foods. They take time to do that. You know, take the time to do things right as well. And, you know, even if you like Oreos and this is your first move into eating healthy, go to the health food store and buy an organic version of Oreos. And then you're going to progress from there. A lot of people say, well, Marcus, you're too strict and you're too, you know, people aren't going to change overnight drastically like you expect them to. And I didn't change overnight. It was one step after another. So you identify what you want to eat better. You stop going to the regular grocery store and you go to a health food store. You get into a community supported agriculture. You buy a share of a farm. So every week you're getting certain produce fresh delivered to you. You start drinking, you know, one juice a week. Then it's two juices a week. Then, you know, then you buy your own juicer and you buy and make enough juice to drink all day. So it's this progressional step that a lot of people think, oh, I have to do everything at once. It's not everything at once. It's starting. Yeah. Now, some people want to do everything at once, which is perfectly fine. There's certain things that I like to do. I just go out and do it all at once. You know, people quit smoking or drinking cold turkey, which is fine. Do it all at once. Whatever suits you is what you have to do. You have to set yourself up for success.
Chef Marcus, we're at the end of the show, and I just – briefly, if you could just give us a website for my listeners to look you up, maybe find some recipes. Where could they find you or follow you?
So if you go to chefonamission.com, chefonamission.com is my main website where you can find out everything I do, all my YouTube videos. And there's a link there for My Green Restaurant. Click that link. That'll take you to my restaurant, Aroma Thyme Bistro, thyme like the herb. And I have 30, 40 recipes there. My YouTube channel is loaded with lots of healthy tips on food. I'm currently interviewing a lot of marine biologists and scientists right now on farmed salmon, on the detriments of farmed salmon. So that's a focus of my channel lately. But of course, you'll find all kinds of great tips on my channel, from being a better runner to making your own juice to properly washing your food. People don't realize it, but right. You know, don't go to the store and pick up an apple and just eat it without washing it. Make sure it's properly washed.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on tonight. It was such a pleasure. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And if you have any questions, you can send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Chef Marcus, thank you. My listeners, thank you. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.
My pleasure.